February 7th, 2017, and Rosanna is reading the New York Times.
Thank you, and good afternoon. So, first page of the New York Times today starts with Somalia, the elections in Somalia, fueled by bribes and coercion. This seems a general disease. Then, reality chills heated words on health law. It's an article written by Michael Scheer and Robert Peer. In Washington, asked at a confirmation hearing 2 weeks ago if he was working with President Trump on a secret plan to replace the Affordable Care Act, Representative Tom Price, Mr. Trump's nominee for Secretary of Health and Human Services, smiled broadly and answered, "It's true that he said that. Yes." Okay, I won't read anything else of this. We already know what we need. And this seems an interesting article. Vatican traditionalists see hero in Trump aid. With Stephen K. Bannon. Stephen K. Bannon was still heading Breitbart News, he went to the Vatican to cover the canonization of John Paul II and made some friends. High on his list of people to meet was an arch-conservative American cardinal, Raymond Burke, who had openly clashed with Pope Francis. In one of the cardinal's antechambers, amid religious statues and book-lined walls, Cardinal Burke and Mr. Bannon, who is now President Trump's anti-establishment eminence, bonded over their shared worldview. They saw Islam as threatening to overrun a prostrate West weakened by the erosion of traditional Christian values and viewed themselves as unjustly ostracized by out-of-touch political elite. When you recognize somebody who has sacrificed in order to remain true to his principles and who is fighting the same kind of battles in the cultural arena in a different section of the battlefield, I'm not surprised there is a meeting of hearts, said Benjamin Hardwell, a confidant of Cardinal Burke, who arranged the 2014 meeting. While Mr. Trump, a twice-divorced president who has boasted of grouping women, may seem an unlikely ally of traditionalists in the Vatican, many of them regard this election and the ascendance of Mr. Bannon as potentially game-changing breakthroughs. Just as Mr. Bannon has connected with far-right parties threatening to topple governments throughout Western Europe, he also has made common causes with elements in the Roman, page 13, let's see if the article is too long, maybe. Doesn't open. Page 13. Oh, it's humid today. It almost rains. We are in the clouds. So, okay, finally, it opened up. with the Catholic Church who opposed the direction Francis is taking them. Many share Mr. Bannon's suspicion of Pope Francis as dangerously misguided and probably socialist pontiff. Until now, Francis has marginalized or demoted the traditionalists, notably Cardinal Burke, carrying out an inclusive agenda of migration, climate change, and poverty that has made the Pope a figure of unmatched global popularity, especially among liberals. Yet, in a newly turbulent world, Francis is suddenly a lonely figure. Where once Francis had a powerful ally in the White House in Barack Obama, now there is Mr. Trump and Mr. Bannon, this new president's ideological guru. I would stop here this article because there are so many other things, and I think the essence of the subject has been touched. This is an article about tech. Silicon Valley jumps into fray over immigration order with push from its workers because in this way they cannot accept new laborers coming from other countries, we cannot afford to alienate employees. And let's see, divided, I read the titles to give an idea of what's going on today. Divided by refugee ban, their lives on hold. And there is a woman who arrived in the United States from Syria in 2013 at her home in Red Hook, New York. Her older sister fled to Germany, but her mother and young sister remain in Turkey, one of the many family disruptions. And then there is all the legal battle around the ban of immigrants, and an article on the national page of the New York Times by Alexander Burns about what Democrats are doing. Democrats appear to find a bulwark against Trump, attorneys general. The three Democratic lawyers met over dinner in a cavernous hotel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, picking at seafood as they discussed how to take on President Trump. Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General of New York, Josh Shapiro, his counterpart in Pennsylvania, and Xavier Becerra, a former congressman who had been sworn in as Attorney General of California only a day earlier. Unrecognized so far from home and little known to one another, the men spent a Wednesday evening late in January discussing a range of White House policies that might unsettle their states, including a mass deportation of unauthorized immigrants. They never anticipated that a live fire test of their teamwork would come less than 48 hours later. Mr. Trump's January 27th decree on immigration, shutting off entry to the United States from seven overwhelming Muslim countries and halting refugees' admissions, left states and cities scrambling to respond. Okay, this is one take on the problem. And another take about people who didn't leave their country is about Amnesty report accuses Syria of mass executions. And there is a picture of President Bashar al-Assad of Syria in Damascus last month, and he has denied accusations of abuses in Syrian prisons. Beirut, Lebanon. The Syrian government has executed 5,000 to 13,000 people in mass hangings in just one of its many prisons since the start of the 6 years-old uprising against President Bashar al-Assad, Amnesty International contends in a new report. The article is written by Anne Barnard. The report on the Saidnaya military prison, which Amnesty said was based on interview with former detainees there, prison employees, judges and others, accuses the Syrian government of systematically executing perceived opponents after sham trials that lasted just a few minutes. Inmates are kept under conditions to dismay, including regular severe beatings and deprivation of food, water, medicine and basic sanitation. They amount to deliberate extermination, defined under international law as a crime against humanity, the report said. While inhumane prison conditions in Syria have been known for decades, the Amnesty report laid out what is described as the new detail, not documented by any human rights monitoring group to date, about the scale of the killings and the state systems required to facilitate them, including approvals by high-ranking officials. We now know where, when, and how often these hangings are taking place, as well as which elements of the Syrian government have authorized them, said Nicolette Waldman, an Amnesty researcher specializing in detention issues and one of the report's authors. Mr. Assad, in an interview with the New York Times and other journalists last year, insisted that detainees were being treated according to Syrian law and that their family could locate them by appealing to the judicial system. But the report corroborates numerous accounts given to the Times by current and former detainees in several prisons across Syria, detailing regular torture and deprivation. It also echoes reports from families of detainees that the government has refused to provide even basic information such as where they are and whether they are alive. I stop here because facts of this article seem to tell enough, and we can have an idea of what's happening in Syria now. And they are facts, they are not fake facts. So, left behind explosives taking toll on Afghan children. You know, it's really, let me say that this seems a newspaper describing a turmoil all over the world in which poor people and without job and children and women and old people are sacrificed to the interests of I don't know whom, of people who like to be in power. And the idea that all these leftover bombs are killing children in Afghanistan is really chilling. Kabul. Months after intense fighting between the Afghan government and the Taliban subsided on the outskirts of Kunduz, Haji Habib Rahmani's families decide to go ahead with a delayed wedding. Amid the festivities, Abdul Basit, one of the children playing behind the house, picked up an unexploded shell and it blew up. Basit, 14, and his brother Haroon, 8, were killed, and 12 other children, ages 7 to 15, were wounded. This is another fact. Oh, and there is Israel, of course, Israel, that passes provocative legislation to retroactively legalize settlements. So, laws exist, but sometimes they are not applied, and so it's important to just to retroact the application of legalized the settlements that are already there and are illegal, clearly, but retroactively they become legal. Israel's parliament passed the article is by Jan Fischer, written in Jerusalem. Israeli parliament passed a provocative law late Monday that would retroactively legalize Jewish settlements on privately owned Palestinian land, pressing ahead with a statement of right-wing assertiveness despite the likelihood that the country's high court will nullify the legislation. It was a defining, opponents said frightening, moment in Israel, ever more distant relationship with Palestinians and amid fading hopes of ending decades of conflict through a two-state solution. While polls consistently show that most Israelis still support two states, their leaders and the reality of what is happening on the ground are consistently heading to the opposite direction. 50 years after Israel defeated Jordan and captured the West Bank and East Jerusalem, many right-wing politicians say that now, with negotiations with the Palestinians frozen, is the moment Israel must decide what it wants and act decisively on it. I think that reading this news is so depressing that I would move to arts and science, hoping to find something smiling, because it's like I feel like immersed in a sort of bath of blood and violence. So, art. Let's see. You know, arts are so treated as the last page. So let's see what happens. The slave who defied George Washington. An article by Jennifer Schlusser. It's about an exhibition in the new book. Return the spotlight to the runaway slave on a judge. These stories are always wonderful. The custom character of at George Washington's gracious estate here are used to handling all manner of awkward queries, excuse me for my Italian accent, whether about 18th century privies or the first president teeth. So when a visitor recently asked an African-American reenactor in a full skirt and headscarf if she knew Ona Judge, The woman didn't miss a bit. Judges escape from the presidential residence in Philadelphia in 1796 has been a great embarrassment to General and Lady Washington, the woman said, before offering her own view of the matter. Ona was born free like everybody, she said. It was this word that made her a slave. Oh, my God, let's hope that this is not happening to us very quickly. It's only 1799 at Mount Vernon, when more than a million visitors annually see the property, and it was just before Washington's death, when his will famously freed all 123 of his slaves. That deliberation did not apply to Ona Judge, one of the 153 slaves held by Martha Washington. I don't understand why, but it's too long. Let's move to something else. The God of Wines, Arts Briefly. Maybe the Arts Briefly can be really nice. Let's see. So, Lady Gaga announces world tour on Twitter. Lost Bob Marley tapes restored after 40 years. Disgraced playwright turns to Wall Street. And then, these were titles. Then a pushing cabaret into a brash new age of candor at the Isaac Mizrahi nightclub act. Not so much about arts, really. Comedy. I was looking for visual arts, I'm sorry. So I'm deceived. I go to the Science Times. Let's see if the blood can be cured. Turning the tide on cholera. A global pandemic rose from the swamps of Bangladesh. Now scientists there may have the tools to stop it. 200 years ago, the first cholera pandemic emerged from these tiger-infested mangrove swamps. Did you ever see a mangrove? It's fascinating. They are like roots that grab, that grow into the water, and they are white, and they are incredibly strong. It began, this is me, the article continues. It began in 1817 after the British East India Company sent thousands of workers deep into the remote Sundarbans, part of the Ganges River Delta, to log the jungles and plant rice. These brackish waters are the cradle of Vibrio cholera, a bacterium that clings to human intestines and emits a toxin so virulent that the body will pour all of its fluids into the gut to flush it out. Water loss turns victim ashamed. Their eyes sink into their sockets and their blood turns black and congeals in their capillaries. Robbed of electrolytes, their hearts lose their beat. Victims die of shock and organ failures, sometimes in as little as 6 hours after the first abdominal rumblings. Cholera probably had festered here for eons. Since the first escape, it has circled the world in seven pandemic circles that have killed tens of millions. Artists of the 19th century, here we have some art, of the 19th century often depicted it as a skeleton with a scythe and victims heaped at its feet. It stalked revelers at the masked ball in Heinrich Heine Cholera in Paris and kissed the protagonist in Thomas Mann, Death in Venice. Outbreaks forced London, New York, and other cities to create vast public water systems, transforming civic life. This is the best article. Today, cholera garners panicky headlines when it strikes unexpectedly in places like Ethiopia or Haiti. But it is a continuing threat in nearly 70 countries, where more than 1 billion people are at risk. Now, thanks largely to efforts that began in cholera's birthplace, a way to finally conquer the long-dreaded plague is in sight. A treatment protocol so effective that it saved 99.9% of all victims was pioneered here. The World Health Organization estimates that it has saved about 50 million lives in the past 4 decades. Just as important, after 35 years of work, researchers in Bangladesh and elsewhere have developed an effective cholera vaccine. It has been accepted by the WHO and stockpiled for epidemics like the one that struck Haiti in 2010. Soon, there may be enough to begin routine vaccinations in countries where the disease has a permanent foothold. Merely creating that stockpile, even of a few million doses, profoundly improved the way the world fought cholera. Dr. Margaret Chan, Secretary General of WHO, said last year, ready access to the vaccine has made countries less tempted to cover up outbreaks to protect tourism, she said, and that has sped up emergency responses and attracted more vaccine makers, lowering costs. More cholera vaccines have been deployed over the last 2 years than in the previous 15 years combined, Dr. Chan said. The treatment advances relied heavily on research and testing done at the International Center for Diarrheal Disease Research, known as ICDDRB in Dhaka. Although Dhaka may not be the first place one might look to find a public health revolution, the center is famous among experts in gut diseases. And I can't read it entirely because it's really, at this point, it's long, it's interesting, and I hope that somebody will read it to the very end. And maybe that's enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rosanna.
It was so damn bloody.
No, the first part was very bloody.
Wasn't it bloody? And so at the end, at least some diarrhea.
I know. put the diarrhea.
Cholera. Oh, God.
I'm going to put this back.
How much do you do?
20 minutes. 20 minutes, perfect.
20 minutes? I think it's enough. You cannot, you know, overwhelm people with too many commentaries.
No, it's good.
It's just good.
Okay.
You had fun? Of the good news?
Yeah.